WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
William Gottlieb, the celebrated photographer of jazz legends from the 1940s, died Sunday at his home in Great Neck, New York. He was 89. Gottlieb's pictures of the jazz greats from the 1940s, including Fats Waller, Pee Wee Russell, Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, and Billie Holiday, have been used again and again on album covers and book jackets and have been turned into posters and postcards. His pictures are collected in the book The Golden Age of Jazz. His picture of Billie Holiday is among the most reproduced photographs in jazz history. William Gottlieb wrote a weekly jazz column for the Washington Post in the late 30s. The Post wouldn't pay the overtime to send a union photographer to late-night clubs, so Gottlieb started taking pictures himself. He wrote and took pictures for jazz magazines through most of the 40s, but in 1948 he left jazz for the more lucrative field of educational media. He had a successful career writing children's books and film strips. When he retired in 1979, he went back to his old photos. Terry spoke to William Gottlieb in 1990.
I kept my negatives ultimately in a shoebox, and after letting it ferment there for some 35, 40, well, actually around 45 years, I dug them out, and lo and behold, it was the beginning of a brand new career, so that today, although I'm 11 years retired technically, I'm putting in a 40, 45-hour week.
Now, you say in your book of your photos that you would usually take only 3 or 4 shots a night.
That's right.
Well, that seems like very little. I know usually when someone from the press comes and they take photographs,
right,
they take 2 or 3 rolls, not 3 or 4 shots.
Right. Well, there's a good reason. I was paying for it. That's one reason. And secondly, when I went out carrying a camera, particularly a Speed Graphic or even a Rolleiflex, quite bulky, and they didn't have electronic flash then, so I had to carry the old-fashioned flash bulbs. And since I never shot with a light on my camera, which produces dull, flat lighting, I had always extensions, and if I had 4 or 5 flash bulbs, I wouldn't take 4 or 5 shots. I maybe would take 2 or 3 and use 2 or sometimes 3 bulbs on a shot to get more interesting lighting. So taking more than 2 or 3 shots was too expensive, too bulky, to a lot of things, and I learned to shoot very, very carefully. I knew the men and women, and I knew the music, and I knew not to shoot until I saw the whites of their eyes, so to speak. I'd wait, not now, 2 choruses from now, there'll be more emotion.
Yeah, you're saying you'd wait till there'd be more emotion. I think one of the special things about your photographs is that most of the ones I've seen anyways are of the musician while they're playing and at a moment when they're really wrapped up with what they're playing, and you really get a sense of the person's character through their face.
Well, I much appreciate that, because my ultimate goal, and that makes, I'm not the only one that does that, but that makes my photographs somewhat different from others that take jazz photographs, is I wasn't out just to get a nice picture, an interesting picture, but I took them as a writer would. What can I say in the picture that would augment the text? And it wasn't always when they were playing, sometimes when they were just listening to a playback or something like that. Now, the ultimate would be to capture their personality, but that's a very elusive quality, and I couldn't do it the majority of the time. So, but instead, I would feature some physical characteristic, perhaps, if it was a unique instrument they were playing, something that would add to the text.
You have photographs of Louis Armstrong from different parts of his career.
Yeah, well, his fat part and his thin part, for one thing. His weight fluctuated all the time, and he was very conscious of this. The last time I saw him was in a dentist's office. We happened to have the same dentist, and I was putting on weight, and he immediately went into his breast pocket and pulled out a diet for me. He always had these diets to give to friends who he thought were a need. And it was unfortunately punctuated by some sort of a liquid dynamite, a laxative that would absolutely blow you apart. And that was a part of the key of his diet. So I didn't really follow it.
Mm-hmm. There are so many jazz photographs that are really smoky. You know, in most jazz photographs, there's a cigarette on the piano, or a cigarette held in one of the keys of the horn.
That's right.
Or the musician's holding the cigarette. And there's just so many photos where the musician's in a cloud of smoke. And I think comparatively, there's very little cigarette smoke in your photographs.
In mine?
Yeah. I don't mean this as any kind of statement, like anti-cancer statement.
No.
But I just always associate jazz photographs with cigarette smoke. It's just
a couple of photographers made a thing of that. It was almost a trademark.
Yeah.
It makes a kind of an interesting photograph to a backlight cigarette smoke, and especially if you have electronic flash, it seems to make it a little easier. But to me, you end up doing an essay on smoke and not on the person. And unless there happened to be some specific reason why I was associating cigarettes to that person, I saw no reason to include that as an element in the photograph. I'd rather show, in the case of Django Reinhardt, for example, who revolutionized guitar playing, despite the fact that his two or three fingers of his fingering hand were destroyed during a fire when he was in his caravan when he was a young man. And I made sure that mangled hand working on the strings was in evidence. That's what I had to say.
One of my favorite photos of the ones I've seen of yours is of the drummer Dave Tough in the cellar of a club during a break, practicing on his drum pads.
Well, Dave was an ascetic person, an intellectual, and a perfectionist. Often when he took a break, you know, in between sets of a number, instead of going out and relaxing, he would go down in the basement and practice on a practice pad, even though he was recognized by the inner circle as the best drummer of the day. So I caught him there with a practice pad drumming in the basement with his gaunt face giving him that ascetic look. And it wasn't prescience in my part, it was happenstance, but next to his practice pad is a glass of wine, which is what ultimately did him in, and he died rather young. But that was just a coincidence.
You have a photograph of Billie Holiday in which her head's thrown back, her eyes are closed.
Yeah.
She looks really lost in the song that she's singing.
Right.
It's a photo I think I've seen, too, on an album jacket or something.
Three albums, three covers of books. I've been told by people who this isn't a scientific analysis, but that this is the most widely reproduced photograph of any jazz person. I wanted to convey the anguish in her vocals, in her vocalizing. Her music and her life is an anguished one, and I think I caught it.
What was the story behind the photograph?
She had just come out of a year's detention on some drug rap, and it may have been an unfair term that she was serving, but she came out looking physically beautiful. Often she was pudgy, but not at that time. And musically, she was at her peak. But the last time I saw her, she had gone down, degressed a great deal. And the word was that she wasn't even showing up at her engagements. But I went to cover it anyhow, and sure enough, the starting time came and went, and no Billie. And I waited a little longer, and still no Billie. So on a hunch, I went backstage to the dressing rooms, and sure enough, there she was sitting on a cot, pretty much without any clothes on, you know, trying to get ready for the date. And I helped put her together and brought her out to the microphone. And then, you know, I lost my stomach for the chore at hand. I neither wrote a review of it because she sounded awful, nor did I photograph her because she looked awful, and I didn't think that was fair. And even, I don't know if I even consciously put it on that basis. I just felt very down about the whole thing and didn't photograph her. But thank goodness I did catch her several times at her peak.
So one last thing. You started off writing about jazz, but ended up becoming much better known for the photographs you took.
Yeah, that's I can't explain it. It's just one of those things. Possibly one of the reasons I've often thought about is that people associated me, the musicians especially, with my camera. They'd see me with a camera. They wouldn't see me with a typewriter. And maybe I'm a better photographer than I am a writer. Whitney Balliet says that though I stopped taking pictures in 1948, no one has surpassed me yet. But when I've spoken to him, he let me know in an interview that I'm a lousy writer. So maybe that's part of it. I don't really know.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, and thank you for having me. It's been very, very much a pleasure.
Jazz photographer William Gottlieb speaking with Terry in 1990. He died Sunday at the age of 89.